Blackpool and Vince Ripper and the Rodents to Els Bailey with Howlin' Wolf. Els, welcome back to the programme. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. I haven't heard that version of that song for ages.
Well,
listening to it again.
And so you should, after all, you did make it. What did you make of Els Bailey and Howlin' Wolf up in the joys of Edinburgh, William?
Incredible.
Incredible. I mean,
can we have more?
We will, actually. Definitely. There'll be
William's
more
speechless.
Actually arriving. Yes, he is. I thought I was having a sandwich and he thought, I can tell, etc. Carenza.
Yeah, I love it. No, really nice. Yeah, sounds like sort of Marianne Faithfull or somebody like that. I'm just amazed by people who can sing. And your voice was damaged when you were younger, and yet you can still sing. I think that's and you get hit the note. I can't sing a note on tune, so I'm always impressed.
It's smoky blues that fizzles with pop appeal. And even Gabby Roslin said, the most incredible voice. Add to that, the sultry blues of Els Bailey is hard not to. I mean, it's just about positivity, etc. Now, a regular co-presenter on Midweek Drive and Sound and Country Vision. Superb, marvellous. So, how's it going, Els? Before we actually move into more Els magic, anything you'd like to share with life, the universe, or indeed, what other things that you've been getting up to over in the West Country?
Oh, I don't know. It's been a little bit of a quiet week, actually. We had a really, really mentally busy weekend, and I did Glastonbury and Manchester on the same day. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of crazy. And then sort of come home, and I've had 3 days off. I was a bit like, oh, I don't know what to do with all this time. So it's been a fun time doing admin. It's called the music business for a reason. You have to do the music, but you also have to do the business. So I've been doing the business.
So it's just multi. Do you know have people to do that for you, Els? I mean, really, we need to get that sorted through. Anyway, good news, William, as you heard, the Els was in Glastonbury, so none of this sort of we'll get there in 2 years' time, etc. Where do you want to take the interview, please?
How much do you enjoy the business bit? Is there any pleasure out of it at all? Or is it just a complete chore?
I do enjoy it a bit. I much prefer doing the music part than the business part. And the business part is probably 90% of the time to the music part. But I do quite like business anyway. But there are some real chorey bits of it that I hate. And they're piling up sort of on my list of things to do. And I was like, oh, I really, 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 really need to sort the business stuff out. So the next couple of weeks is definitely going to be business Bailey rather than music Bailey.
As opposed to Beetle Bailey, of course, a former cartoon character of much American history. Let's look ahead to some of the tour dates we've actually got. 29th of June, of course, you're in Bristol at Rise. And you've got the Devizes. That's the Saddleback Blues Festival. You're also back in Bristol at Clifton Fest for the 9th of July, and then Buckinghamshire on the 14th of July, the Isle of Wight on the 15th of July, Bristol again on the 16th of July, Upton upon Severn on the 22nd of July, and Gloucester at the Café René Rhythm and Blues Festival on the 29th of July. Don't worry if you haven't caught all of that. You can either play the podcast back again or indeed access elsbailey.com. Any questions from your good self, Carenza?
Well, when are you going to come and play Lincoln?
Exactly. The campaign needs to be there.
Yeah. I love Lincoln. I'd love to play Lincoln. But where is there to play in Lincoln? Where should I get a gig?
Shaley.
I would say the Alpac is pretty good for that.
Lincoln Performing Arts Centre.
Yeah.
Exactly. We have, of course, the Engine Shed as well. But there are all sorts of areas that could be developed. And we will work on the Els as the whole thing proceeds.
Okay.
The campaign.
Brilliant. Yeah, I love
there.
That.
So it falls to your good self, Els, to decide, would you like to see us round to our regular correspondent from San Diego with Barrel of a Gun or Wildfire? It's entirely up to your good self. I mean, you could seek advice from William in Edinburgh, or Shaley, or indeed Carenza. It's up to you. Or you could say, no, I've created this scenario. I'll go with this particular thing. So Barrel of a Gun or Wildfire.
So we have to choose which one.
That's exactly right, Els. That is the critical aspect.
The well, I think go with Wildfire because it's the newer one, so let's do that.
I think that's splendid. And he had a little bit of a challenge, I think, William, when he tried the last two questions with our two debut co-presenters from Blackpool. Maybe it's because they were in a hearse. Maybe that's a different line of things. I just got a sense I had to sort of jump in to help out there, otherwise we might have still been asking those two questions. And, you know, time's getting on. Els is a seasoned pro. She's back on the show for, I think, this is her third midweek drive. She's already sort of signed up for Tessa Snart to co-present with the monthly Sound and Country Vision, which is fantastic. So, would you like to put those last two questions to Els, please, William?
I would love to. Els, on a scale of 1 to 10, how interesting has this telephonic link been with Lincoln?
Oh, 10.
Good 10, answer. Right. Was any interest at all in doing it again or not so much?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Hey. Love to.
A round of applause for Els Bailey. She reads the memo. She's on the case. She's absolutely a winner.
Heard the people calling, heard them shout your name. Saw the fire blazing, saw them throw their blade. Well, I heard the stories, I've read them all before. Page by page, I turned them, watched you shut the door. But the storm clouds, they are rolling in. Thunder has split the sky. Like a withered tree that once stood tall. I see through the lies, see through the lies. The heavens open and the sky explodes. Warm water on their burning fire. Ignore the stories, I know the truth. I can see it in your eyes, I can see it in your eyes. Moves like wildfire, throws mud on an unstained sheet. Unraveled, calm and done, you're branded and broken and beat up. Mm-hmm. But the storm. Totally free. Come back once more. I will piece you back together, make you better than before. Come back to me, where the lies have no stick and where you're totally free. Come back once more. I will piece you back together, make you better than before. We'll be right back.
splendid. Els Bailey took us out of the first part of the production with Wildfire and into one of our regular correspondents who effectively is quite literally outstanding in so many ways. In fact, Professor Carenza Lewis, when I said it's Annette Andre from Randall Hot Cook Deceased, she said the original Randall Hot Cook Deceased. Yes, the original and best Jeannie Hopcook. Welcome back to the production, Annette. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. It's good to be back.
Well, as ever, a sheer delight in terms of great news. And I can also say next week on the production, Tim Beddoes will be making his debut at this time.
Oh, good. Yeah. Oh, that's terrific. So yeah, I think that'll be interesting. Mm-hmm.
We had a lovely chat about classic television and everything else. Of course, one of the main people behind the Network DVD brand, responsible, of course, for wonderful upgrades of the digital version of Randall and Hot Cook Deceased and many, many more, including The Saint, The Persuaders. Nice to see that on your Facebook page. You have a nice shot of yourself as PK, I think, from the Power Switch episode of The Persuaders, with, of course, Tony Curtis, strangely not wearing gloves in that episode as Danny Wilde, and the late, great Sir Roger Moore, also not wearing gloves. You're too young to remember The Persuaders, presumably Carenza.
Yeah, no, I don't remember those, but I do remember Randall and Hot Cook Deceased. That was fantastic. I loved that.
Only you can see me. Only you. Annette, this is the time where we go into the letter from the other coast, it's the West Coast, etc., on the station. We've already shared considerably the Facebook page, and the question, of course, what does Burn 286 the Trilby mean? I shall say no more, because I hand over to your good self. Take it away.
Okay, here we go. Burn 286 the Trilby. Where has all the colour gone? Well, not just from the clothing I can no longer buy here in sunny California, unless I want to drape myself in Hamlet gloom. And that dimming of the rainbow goes equally for our language as well. Listen to what passes for a conversation today. And when you minus out all the likes, you knows, kind ofs and sort ofs, you're left with barely enough words to fill a thimble. As a child of London's swinging 60s, I was smack in the center of a revolution that was remaking Britain's drab post-war face, a blaze of creativity led by the Beatles and the startling fashions of Mary Quant and Carnaby Street. It was a time when a clutch of us, actresses and models, were banded together as the Birds of Britain and exported to America to introduce the miniskirt and promote the new hip England to the colonies. Wearing our minis, we crossed Fifth Avenue at the height of Manhattan traffic and literally brought it to a screeching halt. There we were, without a shred of modesty, wearing our long hair, high boots, and the shortest skirts New Yorkers had ever gaped at. That bit of flashing the flesh landed us on the Ed Sullivan TV show and led to a cross-country tour that included my introduction to American diners and the discovery of a new language. I was sitting at the counter of one of those fabulous Art Deco, aluminium, and neon wonders when a waitress with an egg yolk-tinted bouffant that Donald Trump would kill for called out to the kitchen, "Burn 286 a Trilby." Mystified, I asked if she was talking in some kind of code. "You betcha, sweetie, that's diner lingo for two burgers, hold the onions." And so, as the birds traveled across the vast American landscape, we reveled in ordering Adam and Eve's on a raft, two poached eggs on toast, and nodded knowingly when a counterman chided the kitchen with, "I'm on one foot waiting for my Joe and Sinkers, a cup of coffee and donuts." After a long absence, I recently went to a classic diner. The waitress took my order for a grilled cheese sandwich and asked the kitchen for a grilled cheese sandwich. The neon sign outside still flashed diner, but the soul was gone. Gone, too, these many years, was when a walkabout in London's Brick Lane would produce a Cockney's rhyming query, "Oi, where's the cheese and kisses?" Of course, he was only asking for the whereabouts of the missus. My lament in the shortfall of tang in today's world doesn't overlook the extinction of a once thriving breed known as the eccentrics. For those long enough in the tooth, the mention of Quentin Crisp, he of the Borsellino hat and eyeshadow says it all. But then, just as I was about to fold my tent and accept that white bread is the new crepe Suzette, I read about Chicken Delicious, the piano man. As the witching hour of midnight approaches, the regulars at Mimi's, an Italian restaurant and piano bar in Midtown Manhattan, crowd around the shop-worn Steinway and wait for a Sydney Greenstreet lookalike to begin his opening gambit. Good evening, everyone. My name is Chicken Delicious. I come from Mississippi, and I live on the kindness of strangers, he drawled softly, tapping his tips jar. Then, under the pastel glow of Tiffany lamps, Mr. Delicious, not his real name, he concedes, tickles the ivories until hints of dawn invade the intimate mood he's woven with the Gershwin songbook and Broadway classics. At least once a night he breaks into song, a hit or miss affair that never fails to elicit affectionate laughter from his devoted fans, who include Liza Minnelli and a New Zealand brain surgeon. Soon after arriving in New York 50 years ago, he apprenticed himself to a man who inducted him into the city's occult underground of voodoo and Wiccan rituals. This man, Mr. Delicious vows, had an extraordinary ability to invoke the dark powers. One night, while they dined in a restaurant, a waiter displeased the man. He waited until the waiter entered the kitchen with a tray full of empty dishes, and then set his pants on fire. Well, eventually Mr. Delicious broke with his mentor when he realized that he was edging into using his gifts at mind reading and healing for uncharitable ends. Today, the only exterior manifestation of his relationship to the occult is his large collection of masks that he fashions himself, of celebrities such as Justin Bieber, Elvis, Marilyn Monroe, and a chorus of fairies adorned with elaborate hairdos and makeup. Before performing each night, Mr. Delicious throws a set of bones that tell him which mask to wear so that he can channel the spirit of that person to help someone in the audience to find their path in life. I read about Chicken Delicious and his lucky coterie of fans with the envy of someone who has had to do without a Mimi's in her life for too many years. What I wouldn't give, even for one night, to be part of that group around the Steinway and give myself up to Mr. Delicious and his rare brand of fantastical magic. I'd even 86 the Trilby in exchange.
Extraordinary. Wonderful. William, I've got to bring you straight in from Edinburgh. Thoughts on that particular routine? Take us from miniskirts in New York through to Chicken Delicious and the kindness of strangers.
It's wonderful. Very evocative, isn't it?
Sorry, William, we just missed that last part again. Just share with us.
Very evocative of the whole place. Yeah, it's beautiful.
And as Shane...
Did you have any idea of what the lingo meant?
I have to be honest, I've no clue. But Carenza, has anybody uttered the words "burn to 86 the Trilby" in your existence?
Not before the last 5 minutes. No, that's new to me. But I love your account of sort of the 60s and going to America in the miniskirts. It just, I mean, I don't remember that time, but it just that era that seemed to be optimistic and outward looking and upward moving. It just sounds fantastic. And
It was. I mean, it really was a time that, if you were there, you couldn't possibly ever forget and even long for a little bit.
Yeah, which, if you had to live a year of your life again, which one would you choose?
Oh, I'd choose probably around 1967.
67 was a very good year. Summer of Love, of course, and 50 years ago today. That's where we were sort of all celebrating all manner of bits and pieces.
Oh, is it? Is it today?
I didn't know that. Shaylee, you were particularly impressed with the writing, I believe.
Yeah, it's just I couldn't believe that you'd actually written that. Not that it's a slur on you at all, But very
she well slaves every month in, month out to produce these. One of these days, Annette will be publishing this in a genuine book form. It's all there. You can listen to podcasts.
I'm going to buy it. I was aware that 86 means to get rid of.
As I know, yes.
Why it means that. Yeah. It's just lingo that, I mean, I don't know the whys and wherefores. My husband, I'm not sure he knows it. He's American, so he understands much more.
Arthur knows so much, but even he might have been bemused by the 86 scenario. So.
Well, yeah, they used to use it quite a lot. 86 became a thing of get rid of it, you know. Yeah, well, even not, I knew that
one. We're certainly not ready to 86 William Coles as yet, because he's still with us for a few moments. But William, anything else you'd like to add to Annette? Over in, as we connect, we started with Edinburgh and Jersey, now Edinburgh and San Diego. It's like one small world, as Disney would say. It's a small world.
It is.
Jeannie, it's got the feel of Alistair Cook and his Lessons from America. Hmm. Did you used to listen to his stuff?
Oh, my goodness.
I've seen Annette Andre as being the equivalent to a 21st century version of Alistair Cook's Letter from America. That's why monthly audio missives have become quite literally unmissable. Gorenza, any other thoughts from yourself?
Yeah, I was just thinking about Alistair Cook. I just remember I used to listen to them in the sort of 80s when I was at university, wishing I was back in the 60s in many respects. That sort of elegiac sort of linking the past with the present. It's a real skill.
And many of the humorous asides that Annette sends me in terms of Donald Trump are unbroadcastable, but still.
Oh, go on, broadcast.
No. You can tell us later.
It's a whole new world.
I did get a little mention in there today with the bouffon, with the egg yolk bouffon.
It's always important to keep that little edge going. I think it keeps it on his toes. It's very important. Okay, William, you've been with us. Do you want to stay with us for a few more minutes while we head off to another summer musical treat, or do you need to vacate the studios from Edinburgh?
I've got to scurry. My youngest son is already hammering on the door.
In which case, let's see.
I would hate him to intrude into the siren's musings.
let's just sort of reverse this. Annette, would you like to ask William Coles, writer extraordinaire and indeed a wonderful sort of lyricist and indeed former Washington correspondent during the days of Monica Lewinsky, no less. Would you like to ask William those last two questions, please, Annette?
The last two
questions.
Yes,
where we basically say, have you had a recently interesting telephonic link and is he coming back again?
Oh, that one, yes. Mm, mm, mm. Have you had a wonderful, what do we say?
Telephonic link, it'll be fine. It's fine.
Have you enjoyed it all?
Yes, have you enjoyed it all?
I've loved it. Thank you so much.
And will you be back again?
Just as soon as the chief asks me.
What? There we are. William Coles heads off into the distance. We close his fade, his channel down. We say thank you in so many wonderful ways. And Shady, go for it. Would you like to put those last two questions to Annette before we head off to Gary Martin with Te Quiero Mucho?
Certainly. Annette, have you enjoyed your telephonic link with Siren FM today?
Very much, very much.
Oh, excellent. Can we count on you again?
You certainly can.
Perfect.
And we wonder who the winning prize sort of sold, actually, because they will have if they've correctly identified what the topic was going to be about.
No one got it. No one had a clue. Yeah.
Never mind.
The more you know.
It's their loss, you see.
I may have made it a little bit too difficult.
It was a toughie, I must admit.
I probably would have been better to have done an Adam and Eve on a raft, which is two poached eggs on toast.
Now, I was intrigued by that because I was trying to work out why two poached eggs on toast would be Adam and Eve. And I initially thought of maybe a female anatomical thing, and then I thought of a male anatomical thing, and then I got sidetracked. Why on earth are two poached eggs?
I actually don't think you can put any logical reason into it whatsoever.
It is what it is. Am I overthinking it?
It's slang in Cockney, you know.
It's extraordinary. Shaylee, last two questions for Annette, please.
Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today?
Yes, very much. We've already said that, haven't we?
I'm repeating myself.
Yes, we have.
She will return. Lord above. I don't know.
It's
sometimes.
Just the echo chamber.
You notice that, exactly. The sort of the routine. We're more about Lincoln Lights coming up in a few moments. Lincoln, get hold of Tech and Science. Plus, we've got Gary Martin, who's going to be talking about his latest summer release, Te Quiero Mucho. Te quiero mucho, mi bonita señorita. Te quiero mucho, baby, tonight.
quiero mucho, mi vanilla señorita. Te quiero mucho, baby, tonight.
Quiero mucho, Indolo Man, otherwise known, of course, of Gary Martin, voiceover artist extraordinaire, and indeed the audio introduction as produced by Goodself on BBC Radio 4 shows a wonderful Lambda training. Not the kind of thing you would have thought would be Ricky Martin-esque at all, in many ways. Welcome back to the programme. How are you, Gary?
Alex, I'm really well, thanks. Nice to be speaking to you again.
Well, I feel as though it's almost the quintessential notion of summer, that the rains start falling down from the sky and we have to play Te Quiero Mucho as a kind of rain dance song to kind of, you know, work our way through.
A reminder of the British weather.
A reminder of the British weather. Fantastic.
Oh, here in London, looking through my window now, and it is grey. Is it grey in Lincoln too? It's not good.
Grey and wet in Lincoln.
It's rained all day. It never rains all day. It's actually rained all day.
Yes, from the moment I arrived on campus at 7 a.m. this morning to this present moment in time, 11 hours of consistent rain.
I walked here in the rain. I'm going to walk home in the rain, I think.
Oh, no. Let's go to Spain. Let's get Learjet and go down.
Because the rain in Spain... I won't go there. Nice little tie-up with, of course, earlier incarnations from the delights of Tony Manila and company. We had Vince Ripper and the Rodent, which, of course, tied in with your time at the Rocky Horror Show, and Joseph and his amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, A Little Shop of Horrors, and a whole variety of other things, because that's what you do when you graduate from LAMDA, the London Academy of Music and Dramatic Arts. I speak as a former saw myself who, just before doing the chemistry and biology degree, did the LAMDA route, and it hasn't done me any harm, or has it?
No, it's a wonderful place. But you listing those shows I did in the West End, they've got so many horrors in them.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, so, Little Shop and Rocky Horror.
Well, this is, and then we come to Takeru Mucho, and Shaylee went white. You know, she thought, it's like Ricky Martin all over again. I can't take it. You know? I think watch the video, see the way language is used in the video, and you might sort of come out of that again. You know, it's good. It's a summer sand.
Thank you,
Professor Karanza Lewis. You were intrigued by the meaning as ever.
Well, I was trying to remember from my not particularly good grasp of Spanish what it actually meant, the song. Is it I want you a lot or I like you a lot?
No, te quiero mucho can mean I like you, but te quiero mucho, it means I'm in love with you. Te quiero mucho.
Okay,
And tú eres maravilloso means you're wonderful. So it's just having a smattering of the Spanish language. When I wrote it, well, I co-wrote it with Kevin, we just wanted to come across with as a guy who goes to Spain for a summer holiday and meets somebody he likes, and there's a language barrier, so that's why it's in Spanglish.
Do you know, I can really relate to that, because the reason I have any Spanish is because I did a term and a half of evening classes, having been on holiday to France, sort of touring around France on a motorcycle, and then going across the border into Spain and being completely unable to communicate. And I think we're in the sort of Basque region, so I don't actually think they were speaking Spanish or French. But I came back from that holiday just thinking, I could speak French. I was used to being able to get myself around. And I just came back thinking, I'm going to have to learn some Spanish. This is ludicrous. So
Did you get any of the food that you wanted when you went to the restaurant?
Difficult. We spent most of the first day trying to find someone to stay. So find anyone who could explain.
But no, this
with the restaurant, you just go in and say, you raise your eyebrows and smile, and they'll bring you a menu and then bring you something they choose off it. So that's easy, as long as you get some food.
Exactly.
And all Spanish food is lovely.
But if you're in the Basque country, you're speaking, I think it's Euskera, which is, it's very difficult. I wouldn't even attempt that myself.
it was very strange. Right up in the mountains, and we'd literally gone across some sort of pass somewhere. And,
It is beautiful there. It really is beautiful there.
Yeah. No, and we were sort of camping and staying in bed and breakfasts and stuff. It was good. But it was, you know, I just thought near the border, they'll speak both languages. But I don't think they spoke either.
I know, especially if you're in the mountains, you're not going to get much English up there, I wouldn't have thought. But it's a nice adventure. I suppose you have to learn a little bit of the language. I think it's really important you do so. Otherwise, you're going to stay within a certain area and never move out of it.
You never try. I think you should go into any country. I always try to get yes, no, please, thank you, sorry, I don't speak, whatever it is. You know,
I think it's appreciated. It really is appreciated.
It's called making an effort to connect with other fellows on this planet Earth.
It's polite, isn't it? I'm sorry. It's the most useful thing you can learn, because it's so. Of course, some languages sort of, I'm sorry if you've bumped into someone and I apologise, are actually different words. But just being able to say I'm sorry, I think, is really helpful.
But we shouldn't apologise. We shouldn't apologise for the empire.
Quite.
You know, we must not apologise for the empire. No, let's move into another routine. Gary, a whole heap of other scenarios here. Let's look at some of the statistics that we've actually got here. Now, as a singer, you've released 6 singles, so that's fine. But just looking at the numbers here, you have effectively recorded, voiceovered, and we were into 40,000. That's Warhammer 40,000, etc. Heaps of countless television ads, movie trailers. This is the number. Over 2,500 cartoons have featured your voice.
If you're classifying them as kind of also individual episodes, that's how it works out. I mean, I've been doing cartoons and film animation things. In fact, I was doing one today, which is going to be a great series. It won't be out until next year. It's called Furry Wheels. It's like a cross between Wacky Races meets The Lion King, and it's looking brilliant. I love it, because it's just, you just get to go in there, Alex, and you just get to be somebody else and suddenly create this character just by looking at a picture, and you think, okay, what can I come up with this voice? And it's just so much fun. I get paid to do it.
Furry Wheels, and currently recording a brand new Disney animation series to be released sometime this year.
No, next year. next year.
It's quite apart from being the voice of J.K. Rowling's Fantastic Beasts trailer campaign and, major sort of kudos to this, the Captain Aquafresh campaign.
Oh, yeah, we've been doing that. That's really strange you said that. We did that this morning. He's kind of based on... I'm kind of based on a 50s kind of... those sci-fi 50 things, you know, when they talk like...
Captain Aquafresh!
This is Aquafresh. It's like this. He came from Planet X.
Starring hero. Exactly.
It's that kind of Walter Cronkite. This is Walter Cronkite on CNN. They always have that kind of voice. So I'm kind of based on
that. We might have lost Adam West... but there's obviously a replacement waiting to that. I mean, I could also add the voice of the honey monster as well, and I'm Shaylee's going to sort of be reprising the entire scenario.
I used to love Sugar Puffs.
Exactly.
Sugar Puffs. I'm very fond of that character. Hey, Sugar Puffs, tell them about the honey mummy.
So you see, Shaylee, had I said it's the voice of the honey monster who's doing Te Quiero Mucho, a different line entirely, but I just want to preempt the whole thing. That's important.
You should have started with that, gone in with that line.
Or called the song Te Quiero Sugar Puffs.
Yeah. Nice.
in the yellow suit, would have been good, wouldn't it?
It'll be a re-release, a remix version. Gary, we still need to squeeze in the Hyper Chariot, a piece of science which is there, and I have to sort of throw these last two questions to you at this particular stage. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Oh, yeah. I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed it last time, and I've enjoyed it even more this time.
Well, Te Quiero Mucho is available for download and all manner of wonderful things. You can also go to garymartin.co.uk to find out a whole heap of other things. Will you be kind enough to return in the not-too-distant future?
I would absolutely love to. It's been a pleasure.
Excellent. And to actually sort of just work our way through this, would you like to, in the voice of the Sugar Puffs, introduce the Cars and Drive?
So the Cars and Drive, and you want it done as...
as a Sugar Puff monster. as a honey monster. Honey monster. Exactly, yes.
Okay. Tell them about the honey mummy. We're going to listen to the Cars and Drive.
Who's going to tell you when it's too late? Who's gonna tell you things aren't so great? You can't go on thinking nothing's wrong. Gonna drive you home tonight. Who's gonna pick you up when you fall? Who's gonna hang you?
Say, well, we'd expected by now to actually be having silver-suited folk flying around in all manner of ways, and it's just not happening. Well, maybe actually it is closer than we think, because super-speed tube transport, I'll say it again, super-speed tube transport may not just be a pipe dream. 4,000-mile-per-hour super-shuttle whisking passengers between London and Edinburgh in just 8 minutes is a genuine possibility. And to address this and talk a bit more about the wonderful scenario of the Hyper Chariot, we're delighted to welcome the dynamic duo, co-founders, of course, of Hyper Chariot. First of all, Joanna Garzilli. Good morning, Joanna. How are you?
Good morning, Alex. And we will make sure we are dynamic.
Absolutely. And your partner and co-founder, of course, Nick Garzilli as well. Good morning, Nick.
Good morning, Alex. Great to be here with you.
Well, a genuine delight. And this particular story, I mean, as somebody who would like to define himself as a little bit of a futurist, you know, I followed the Gene Roddenberry pattern. The future is optimistic. Let's positively look our way through this. This is a real opportunity for an eco-friendly way, which will cover, in the case of the London to Edinburgh scenario, a 332-mile journey, not by instant matter transportation, because that's a way down the line, but it's a heck of an improvement in terms of some of the routes that we have to take to get up there. Nick, share with us what made you come up with this particular idea.
Well, I did not come up with the idea. I'm not the inventor. I got involved with this in 2011. Hyperchariot is part of the ET3 consortium. The inventor's name, his name is Daryl Oster, and he had the idea in an engineering class in the 80s. It became a life obsession of his in the 90s, and then he got his first patent issued, the original patent in 1999. Since then, there's been a lot of development behind the scenes. We now have over 25 patents in our portfolio, including the brand new one, the most important one, which is the maglev swishing system, which is the way that the vehicles change lanes, basically.
And interesting enough, this concept, which Jules Verne actually put together as the space gun, was a possibility he suggested back in the 19th century of how we could actually get from the Earth to the Moon and so on. And you mentioned the maglev transport. I've seen lots of speculative fiction writers develop that. Are we getting to the stage where the science, the fantasy, the power of the imagination are actually developing those wonderful things? Joanna, if we can come to you with respect to this, because you know, surely whatever we can conceive, perhaps we can achieve as human beings.
Absolutely. I really feel and see, and we can see it through in our society and our environment around the world, that there is a quickening that is happening. Things that maybe took 30 years to come to fruition before are happening in a 10-year period. I sort of like to think of it like our evolution that we're experiencing is it's compounding, just like compound interest. And I remember going to a conference back in 2012. With a futurist, Roger Hamilton, and they put up certain inventions. At the time, it was 3D printing and certain robotics, and you know, people looked very uneasy in the audience, and it just seemed, well, how is this going to happen? Yet we are seeing these things on the marketplace today, and you know, everything. I don't think it's if with these things; it's just when. Obviously, the Wright brothers and JFK were great examples of being able to be visionary and have an idea for something and then bring it to fruition, even though, you know, when something doesn't exist, obviously we think it is impossible. But this isn't if it's coming. This absolutely high-speed tube transport is absolutely the future. And it's super energy efficient. It's going to get people out of traffic. It's going to minimize accidents. I mean, this is definitely... It's going to make a huge difference for everyone.
You mentioned John F. Kennedy there, of course, probably more of an inspirational orator. And indeed, many people would actually say, yeah, that's what we sometimes lack in our politicians today. But that's for a whole other story and a whole other set of interviews. So let's put that to one side. The Velocitator, not to be confused with Velociraptor, of course, that's a different line entirely. But in terms of the Velocitator, that's the working title of this particular system. It's not too long, really, Nick. 2021 is when we're looking to, or when we're looking to actually unveil the first practical Velocitator in action. So, you know, literally 4 years away.
Yeah, you know, this can happen really fast. So we actually think that within a year and a half, we're going to have a full-size capsule and a short track. But, you know, it's going to take about a year to build the full three-mile demonstration. We're going to be testing it for a year, and then a little bit more time to theme it and to turn it into a world-class attraction. So we're giving ourselves to 2021. If we sped it up, maybe we could do it a little bit faster. But we think by 2021, people will be riding this, and they're going to be having a hell of a time.
And the step before that is a 4,000-mile-per-hour virtual reality experience, so that for people that think, oh, my gosh, what's going to happen if I travel at 4,000 miles per hour? It's a good way to get people used to this and the first step in commercialization. So we're looking to open that at the end of the year in 2018 in Los Angeles, California.
Well, we'll get our Los Angeles correspondents on there. I've got several TV directors already I know will be up for doing a piece on this particular area. So we'll definitely spread the word as far as that's concerned. Interesting, you mentioned the line about clearly testing scenarios and the sort of concerns, because I seem to recall back in the days of the horseless carriage, people thought if you travelled over 30 miles an hour, you'd probably get nosebleeds.
Yeah, you know, funny thing, some of the first laws that were passed on automobiles were to protect horses. Right? It's like,
Well, absolutely. You know, I mean, you go through, and in fact, ironically, it has often been said that in the streets of London today, it was quicker to get round by horse and carriage than it is currently with respect to car. But that's, again, another scenario. The hyper chariot, as we said, is happening. Looking at the sort of area in terms of people are saying, oh, yes, well, that'll be well out of my price range. It's really going to be affordable. I mean, London to Edinburgh, you're looking at around about £100. So, you know, very much in terms of the sort of reach of your average transport. And presumably, we are looking at this as a mass transport mechanism.
Yes, this is it's literally a circulatory system for transportation.
As we say, there's a whole range of things in terms of the electric linear motors. Just in terms of that speed thing, I'm just sort of conscious about the notion is when we see people rocketing forward and so on, there are certain G-forces that impact. Presumably, you'll be putting that in place and people won't have had to have full medicals to cope with extraordinary G-force pressures when they're accelerated at this rate.
Speed is relative. You only feel the difference in speed. So, you know, you feel the acceleration, the deceleration, you feel the turns. But you got to remember, when you're in an airplane nowadays, going 550 miles an hour walking around, you know, but it's just like you're on the ground. So with Hyper Chariot, you're never going to feel over 1G of acceleration. Just to give you an idea of what that feels like, an airplane today takes off about 0.6G. The top of the line Ferrari, Porsche Turbo S, or that new, and I've in ludicrous mode, Tesla 100D, those are pulling 1.4 Gs of acceleration. And the same electric linear motors that are used to propel the capsule in Hyper Chariot, those are amusement parks right now, and people are feeling 4.2 Gs of acceleration. So we ease into that. So to get up to 400 miles an hour, it takes about 18 seconds. But the first 2 seconds, you go from 0 to 100% acceleration. So it's not like right off the bat, bam, we throw your head against the backrest. We're going to ease into it.
You're also in a really
comfortable F1 kind of type seating position where you take the G's in your back, and then when you slow down, you'll be able to use your feet to brace yourself a little bit too, and also your bottom will be taking the G's. So unlike an airplane where they make you sit upright and it makes you go back and forth, imagine if you're more in a reclined position. It's going to be really comfortable, and it's going to be super quiet, super smooth, so there's no turbulence. And you're in control. I think that's the big difference here. It's a car-sized vehicle. You're making requests to the computer if you want to get off and hit a small town. And that's another big thing for us versus high-speed rail and even Hyperloop. We can hit those small towns. Any town of 50,000 plus, around 50,000 people, it makes sense to put a portal there, and we can add it later, just like you would add an off-ramp to a freeway.
So technically, you could actually travel from London to Lincoln, Middlesbrough and Edinburgh and stop off on those two places en route with the routine. It's a hyper chariot without the stress of a Ben-Hur challenge. You don't have to worry about that. Marvellous stuff there. Final questions at this particular stage. Where can people go to continue finding out about what development stages the hyper chariot is going through? I'd obviously recommend, Joanna, that they get hold of a copy of Big Miracles, published by HarperCollins. Fantastic sort of text from that point of view. But any other sort of areas that you'd recommend people should go to find out more specifically about the Hyper Chariot?
Absolutely. They can find out more for updates at hyperchariot.com, and also to connect with us on social media as well, on Twitter, on Facebook. We're at Hyper Chariot. On Twitter, at Hyper_Chariot. So we'll be posting updates there on a regular basis, and we love engaging people too, and we're happy to answer any questions.
We talk to a lot of people on social, so I'm very active on that. So
100% solar powered, zero emissions. It's got to be a good news story. Using the traditional medium of radio, well, it still works in all sorts of ways, and podcasts and so on. Joanna and Nick Garzelli, many thanks today. A couple of final questions, actually. First of all, have you guys had a reasonably interesting telephone link with us today on the program from your perspective? Has it been okay?
Wonderful.
Yeah.
This is good.
Absolutely fantastic. We've had a. It's been really fun and.
So the next critical question is, can we look forward to connecting with you and continuing regular updates, whether you're in Los Angeles or indeed England or wherever you happen to be? Will you be kind enough to keep us appraised and our listeners appraised of the exciting work of yourselves and the Hyper Chariot?
We would love to, Alex. Very much so.
That would be great.
Excellent. Now, when you bear in mind that Phil Leonis has just returned from a 32-day road trip, Phil, you needed to wait a few years until the Hyper Chariot is in full force, and then, you know, the magic would have been done in about 16 minutes.
Alex, you know, if it reduces the environmental footprint of most modern travel or contemporary travel, then, of course, I'm all for it. At the same time, no thank you. Because life is about the journey, not about the destination. We already are a people, at the risk of sounding anti-technology, we are already a people who have faster access than ever before to information, and yet who retain and understand nothing of that knowledge we have access to. Things have become so fast that we as people, all our processes seem to have slowed down, if not burnt out. And I've got to tell you, the slower you can travel, the better for immersing yourself, for preparing yourself, for experiencing the journey. I've always been an avid reader about places far flung from where I was at that particular time. But until visiting those places and immersing myself in the nature, in the landscape, in the geography of it, do those stories and those histories and those understandings start to take on a visceral resonance that is far deeper than any intellectual understanding? If you do not understand people's relationship to their particular geography, to their particular place, you can't hope to truly understand what transpired there. You're merely a tourist. And so these portals from place to place that bypass all the space in between, the meaning of life is in those spaces in between, I would caution. Again, we want to reduce our footprint. That is absolutely certain. We want to do that. However, I also worry if we cut out altogether our relationship to those spaces in between, what might we do to those spaces in between then?
Carenza.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I wrote a paper a year or so back on sort of relating to deep mapping, which has that same idea about experiencing the landscape you're travelling through and going to the places in between and kind of really getting a sensation of that. And I remember when the that volcano went off and nobody could fly for 10 days.
Was this Iceland?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It affected a huge area. And there were huge numbers of people who suddenly realised quite how far away
It was, yeah, and
you know, couldn't get back, and people were having to try and travel overland, and you know, getting back from Norway was really quite difficult. And so I think people don't have an appreciation. These days, yeah, you get decanted into a little capsule and deposited somewhere else, and kind of it's an instant change. I love the idea of slow traveling across a landscape.
We
already have as small a relationship to this planet. Even as the planet gets smaller and smaller, we seem to have less and less a relationship to it. And that's why I advocate the slower the mode of travel you can afford with whatever it is that you feel the need to accomplish, embrace the slowest travel possible. After all, it's always possible to go faster. So in Los Angeles, I eschew driving altogether in favor of bus and tube. And
I've driven through Los Angeles. I think that'd be worth doing anyway. It must be this terrible place to drive through.
Well, exactly. In Los Angeles, if you're in a hurry, get out and walk. But but then when we were driving 8,000 miles across the country, we eschewed interstates. We took two-lane back roads. We took farm-to-market roads. Not really marginally increasing our travel time, but many-fold increasing the experiences that we were able to immerse ourselves in.
When we were in Los Angeles, we were doing one of those sort of tour bus things, and the bus broke down, and they were going to take an hour to come and get us. And we said, well, we'll walk back. We can, how far is it? And they said, and they looked at us as if we were mad. And
aliens.
I thought,
aliens from another planet.
I thought, is it a dodgy area? You know,
we don't walk now. That's
said,
not
no,
a thing.
No, it's fine. It was about a mile and a half, 2 miles.
Oh, that's easy.
And they couldn't believe. Absolutely, they couldn't believe
but
we were going to do
it. With all due respect, with all due respect, it's not the question that made them look at you like you were crazy aliens. It's your funny accent.
maybe.
Well, there we have it. Shaylee, any questions that you have for Phil Leonis about now he's recovered? I mean, the lightning bolts that were striking when we had the Lil and Phil show, the penultimate episode of the thing. Just, I mean, it's worth just downloading just for that alone, really. I treated myself to two back-to-back Chill Pack Hollywood episodes this very day whilst talking about your bits and pieces. Very good indeed. Or perhaps, Phil, you'd like to talk about Lincoln Get Hold of Tech and Science on Friday the 29th of September 2017 at the University of Lincoln. Maybe you'd like to lead him in with that, Shaylee. It's entirely up to yourself.
Does Lily feel the same way as well about technology and, you know, like taking a breath kind of thing?
One, absolutely. Two, I never voice an opinion unless I've cleared it with her first.
And there we go.
Said every man in the whole world.
You've seen Wonder Woman the movie, so
exactly.
It is my job to save the day. It is her job to save the world.
So let's move on to Friday the 29th of September, shortly.
That's Wonder Woman. I just quoted Wonder Woman, and I get no props for at all.
I'm sorry for that. Course.
Alex just glossed over it as if it never happened.
I gave it a turn. I thought it was an outstanding movie. As I said, I think you could actually see in context Batman versus Superman being reappraised, but that's another issue for another time and another
time. Well, no, yeah, reappraised as in even worse. Because if they knew how to make a decent movie, why didn't they do it then? But I had an amazing experience with Wonder Woman because I said, boy, this is the hero movie we really do need right now. And also I had, at the same time, the experience of realizing at 48 years old, this will be the last superhero movie I see. I don't need another one.
No!
Don't say that.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I'm 48. It's time to put away. It's time to put away childhood.
Oh, no.
Anyway, go ahead.
Alex is shaking his head.
Just absolutely outrageous, exactly. It's like losing touch with life, really. As Johnson said about London, if you're bored with London, you're bored with life, really. Same. Moving on, Carenza, to Lincoln Lights. So we've obviously threaded this theme through the production from the outrageous Vince Ripper and Ratty, of course, through Annette André with the delightful dinner lingo, or diner lingo, I should say, through a variety of other bits and pieces. But let's explain why we should get hold of tech and science for the world in Lincoln on the 29th of September.
Well, because it's all there to come and find out about. Yeah, 29th of September, all day, free for anyone and everyone who wants to come and find out about things. And, you know, I'm just looking through the programme here. Everything that comes up, there's something that's relating to it. So we're talking about slow walking, slow travelling. Mm. There's a bat walk where you can explore around Lincoln Castle and find out about the bats. And then exactly the same day, there's a performance of an art science show about how I hacked my way into space. The relationship between the Tim Peake and the director of human spaceflight. You know, there's just that whole range of different stuff.
And see the world through your dog's eyes?
Yeah, absolutely. How does your dog see the world? How can you find out how your dog sees the world? Well, you can use eye trackers and actually work out what your dog's looking at. But how fascinating is that going to be?
That sounds really interesting, actually, because one of my dogs always watches the television no matter what. The other one's like not bothered, but Ollie will get up on the stand and physically watch the TV, and I'm always wondering like what's going through his
is
his,
it
like,
for his own
brain.
Channel or is it his own
you could just imagine
favorites?
Can't it,
especially if it's like animals on there as well. He's like fascinated by other animals.
That kind of moment when you call your dog and it sort of pays attention to you. How long are you talking to it? Does it take before it starts looking at something else? Or, you know, when they always come and sniff your crotch, are they looking at your crotch beforehand? You know, it's all about.
That's the first time in years I've been appearing on this show that the word crotch has appeared. and it happened twice back to back in case I missed it. I used to have two giant schnauzers, and one of them ran into where we were watching the Westminster Kennel show, and, you know, the big dog show, ran into the room, and for the first time in all its life, stared at the TV and started sniffing and wagging, and it turned out that the dog on the stage was one of its litter because it had been bred as a show dog.
You're joking.
And it came in and recognized on TV one of its offspring. Yeah.
just goes to show. And if you're interested in finding out the most popular names for dogs in the United Kingdom, they are currently Max, Jack, Poppy, Charlie and Alfie. For cats, Poppy, Daisy, Molly, Smudge and Lucy. More about that with Michaela Strachan, who's joining us on the production tomorrow morning.
One of my dogs is called Charlie.
Interestingly enough, most popular name for sloths, Trump. Isn't that interesting?
Yes. Well, no, our cat was called Charlie. Yes. I thought we were being quite original.
Yeah, it's nicely sort of skipped over the potentially sort of bombshell
slanderous
of a scenario.
I meant it with love.
Of course, exactly.
The job, he's not a dictator.
So are you gearing up, Phil, for your return, hopefully, to Manchester and possibly Lincoln in the end of August, as a sort of a month
before?
Well,
if I come to Manchester, I'm definitely coming to I'll be coming for Manchester.
I'll
be staying for Lincoln.
Yeah.
And I would be coming long enough to be able to be in studio with you. But, of course, I mean, Lincoln, you know, I'll ask people who've been to Lincoln, and I'll ask them their opinion. And so often they'll say, oh, yeah, it's a really cute town. And I kind of want to, like, scream in their face, are you cute? What are you talking about?
Where have you been going?
I mean, it is as this show has evidenced. I mean, you've got the frontiers of science and technology. You have the heartbeat of agricultural production. You have the history of Western civilization represented in structures in and around Lincoln. You have a state-of-the-art university. In other words, within an easy distance and during a calendar year, you come into contact with all the best that human expression has to offer. So why would I not be making sure that I visit Lincoln again?
Sometimes, Grimes, I feel I couldn't even sort of write these tributes for the university.
How much did he pay you, Phil?
You know how I was able to write that? I was able to write that during the enormous amount of time I had inside Alex's car as he tried to find the cathedral atop the hill.
We got you there. That's important. We got you there.
And back again. It's the one
way
street. It's the one way street.
That is one time where I would have been contacting Elon Musk saying, get me your tube technology right now and get me inside that cathedral.
It wasn't so much not where the cathedral was, it was actually getting easily accessible to the actual cathedral, Carenza. It's all right. It's a long time ago, and I like to put it to one side.
You know, but what do we call four left turns, Alex? A circle.
Okay. Well, just for that, Carenza, a number between 2 and 27, please.
17.
Intriguing. This is the universe's choice.
Once you make up your mind and start something, commit to it, say yes, and never look back, do you have any doubt, any whatsoever, that I will not rush to your side, that legions won't be summoned, that players won't be drawn to your corner, connections made, circumstances crafted, dots connected, that the course of history won't be irrevocably changed? Good. I didn't think so. I'd say you're ready. The universe.
Excellent choice, as we knew it would be. Thanks to Anna Lewis from Jersey, Professor David Lewis, of course, from London, Vince Ripper and Ratty, in their house in Blackpool, Els Bailey, Annette Andre. Well worth accessing if you haven't, so just for the sort of the diner scenario feel. It's a whole new world there. Gary Martin, of course, Takeo and Rucho, the voice of Honey Monster, and, of course, Joanna Grizzilli and Nick Grizzilli, and the Hyper Chariot, and Phil Leonis. Your last two questions will be delivered by Carenza.
Phil, have you enjoyed your conversation with us this evening?
Minus the voluminous references to crotch, yes, it's been a lot of fun.
Okay, if we promise not to mention that again, would you come back another time?
Oh, okay, you've twisted my arm.
And Carenza, have you enjoyed your return to Midweek Drive?
Absolutely, yes, that's been fantastic.
Again, very shortly, a reminder, of course, the go-to place in terms of the internet and the web and such like, lightsexpo.org. That's lightsexpo.org. Everything's actually on from that perspective. It's going to be a fantastic day, and we'll speak again, obviously, about a whole range of things before.
Challenge
then.
Anyone to not find something that they think, ooh.
Absolutely. Coming up on Siren, a whole range of good things, including the Outspoken Poets people, who'll be back between 8 and 9. And then we're back tomorrow morning with Jenny Bond, Royal Correspondent. We have the delights of Richard Fitzwilliams, Paul Nelson from the World Travel Market. Sarah Ballamore will be talking about the Sow Festival. A reminder, of course, that the Sow Festival is still continuing, even though the weather conditions are a little bit damp. It's still going on, except it's taking place indoors. Oh, Some of it's taking place indoors, and they do have room for that. We've got Olia Hercules and Nikki Kirbishley looking for the nation's next cookaholic. And Gail Porter will be joining us to tell us why wearing a school uniform can help to prevent bullying. That's it, Phil. We're out of here. Thank you for your time. And we simply wrap up as we head into the news with a little touch of Still Got Time and Zane featuring Party Next Door with a final farewell. So after three, a one, a two, a three.
Bye.
Farewell.
Bye.